Read from Shema Bagel Tam, 10 to 11, chapter 7, page 23.
Patramam
through both apparent and indirectly ascertained symptoms. Purport, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the word yuktaha in this verse indicates those engaged in the regulated practice of bhakti yoga. Devotees of the Lord do not abandon their intelligence and become mindless fanatics, as some fools think. As indicated by the words anumanataha and gunair lingai, a devotee engaged in bhakti yoga intensely searches out the personality of Godhead through all of the rational faculties of the human brain. The word mrigayanti, or searching, does not, however, indicate an unregulated or unauthorized process. If we are searching for a telephone number of a particular person, we look in the authorized telephone directory. Similarly, if we are searching for a particular product, we go to a specialized store where we are likely to find what we're looking for. So the Jiva Goswami points out that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not a product of the imagination, and thus we cannot whimsically imagine what the Lord might be. Therefore, to gain information about Lord Krishna, one must conduct a regulated search in the authorized Vedic scriptures. The word agrahyam in this verse indicates that no one can achieve or understand Lord Krishna by ordinary speculation or through the activities of the material senses. In this regard, Srila Rupa Goswami states the following verse in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1-234. Atah Sri Krishna Namadi Na Bhavet Grahyam Indriyai Sevam Mukhe Hijivha Do Svayamevas Bhula Yadaha. No one can understand the transcendental nature of the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Sri Krishna through his materially contaminated senses. Only when one becomes spiritually saturated by transcendental service to the Lord are the transcendental name, form, quality, and pastimes of the Lord revealed to him. The words griyamanai, gunai, indicate the rational and intellectual faculties of the human brain. All of these can be used to directly and indirectly perceive the personality of Godhead. Indirectly, one may experience the Lord through his creation. Since we are experiencing this world through our intelligence and senses, we may conclude that our own intelligence must have a creator, and that creator is therefore supremely intelligent. Thus, through simple logic, any sane person can understand that there is a supreme personality of Godhead who is controlling everything. One may also directly perceive the Lord through chanting and hearing his holy names and glories. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu means that one should always chant and hear of the glories of the Lord. One who perfectly hears and chants will undoubtedly see the Lord face to face. Lord Krishna is all-pervading, and one should search for him everywhere. By the transcendental senses purified by bhakti yoga, one may directly perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As indicated by the word adha in this verse, this perception is direct and not imaginary. This point has been elaborately explained by Srila Prabhupada in his purport to this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.35. Bhagavan sarvabhuteshu lakshita svatmanahari drishyaya bhutyadi bhiyadrashta lakshanaya anumapakahai. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is in every living being, along with the individual soul. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. Om Jnana Timidatasya Jnana Sarakya Chatsuram Vaditam Tena Tasmae Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Tena Guptale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Adaptitva Padantikam Mukam Karoti Vachanam Angum Namkayate Yen Yakripa Samam Bande Sri Guru Dinasaranam. Krishna is instructing Uddhava and is emphasizing the importance of the human form of life. This is a prelude to the story of the Brahmana and a devotee called King Yadu. And the Avadhuta in his meditation on the creation is able to receive instructions from a variety of sources, animals, non-moving objects, the movement of the seasons and so forth. He's able to gain transcendental knowledge or spiritual inspiration and is able to see, who ultimately is able to see the personality of Godhead working behind everything. So this is leading into this. And so Krishna here is emphasizing that the human form of life is a great opportunity to perceive that which is actually beyond the senses. Krishna and Krishna's energies have to be understood and perceived in a particular way. One can't create one's own process to approach Krishna because he's on the transcendent, he's on the spiritual, the non-material platform, amaterial, if you like. And in order to perceive the non-material, one has to do so by a specific process, and that process cannot be material. It cannot be a mundane process. The process for realizing the spiritual has to also be a spiritual process. It's not possible to perceive the presence of God without following the system, the proper systems that are actually created by God himself in order to know him. As mentioned in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, Dhammam Duchacca Bhagavat Panitam. The process of religion is actually revealed by God himself. It's not something that can be created. So the importance of the uniform of life is that one gets an opportunity through developed intelligence, developed mind and developed senses, one gets an opportunity to realize one's spiritual identity and to realize in one's spiritual identity one's relationship with the supreme source of everything, with God or with Krishna. So one who engages in the process of, and as is mentioned in this verse, one who's engaged in the process of devotional service is by their regulated practice of devotional service is actually seeking out their relationship with the Supreme. They're actually seeking out their relationship with Krishna in all of their activities. All of the activities that a devotee is performing, as long as they're under the rules and regulations of devotional service, are an attempt to see Krishna. All the activities of the devotee are an attempt to realize one's spiritual identity and to realize one's relationship with Krishna. In fact, if we don't do that, then our activities become a disturbance. It's mentioned by Rupa Goswami. If one performs devotional service without consideration of the rules and regulations, in other words, if we make up our own process, then all we do is simply create confusion. Is that Shruti 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 Smriti Pura Nadi Puncha Pancharatrika Vidhin Vina Aikantiki Harer Bhakti Utpatyaiva Kalpate? Utpat means disturbance, creates a disturbance. Ridhananda Maharaj gives the example here that if you want to find out somebody's telephone number, what do you do? Yeah. The Beatles had a song. It was called "You Know My Name, Look Up a Number." Huh? Little known song it is. "You Know My Name, Look Up a Number." So this is the process. If you want to find out somebody's name, then you have to go to the telephone book, look it up, and then you'll find their number. Because it's interesting, in this day and age, actually, that you don't go look at the telephone book. You open up you start up your computer and you look on the internet. Which is an interesting phenomenon for us because, our whole process of, well, one of our major platforms of preaching is book distribution. Yet, one of the big phenomena, one of the interesting phenomena at the moment is that newspapers are actually shutting down because they're losing money. People aren't buying the newspapers anymore. They're getting their news on the internet. It's an interesting something for us to consider. And now, companies like Amazon.com and Sony, they actually have electronic devices that they're selling to people. And through those electronic devices, people are actually purchasing books and getting their news and so forth. And of course, their music as well. So in this day and age, it's, you know, if you want to find somebody's telephone number, then the authorised process is to look them up online. It's still the basic principle is the same. Of course, for us, that means that in the future we may have to think of, you know, alternative methods of book distribution. You know, it may not be that you'll be giving people a book, but somehow or other you'll have to work out a way. We'll have to work out a way to distribute books by getting them to purchase them online. It's something for us to consider. May not be tomorrow or the next year, but certainly the BBT is actually investigating these means of book distribution because it's a changing world that we're living in. But still, if you want to find somebody's telephone number, then you have to still go to the directory, and then through the directory you'll get the correct number. Basically, the process is the same. The delivery is slightly different. So similarly also, the process of devotional service is a system, if you like. It's a method by which one can know oneself and know Krishna. And one has to follow that process in order for it to be effective. The principle is the same. Want to find somebody's telephone number, you look up their name in the directory. Or the other example given here by Ridhanand Maharaj is if you want to find a particular product, what you do? You go to the specialised store that sells the product. Or in this case, you go to the specialised website, their online shopping facility, and then you buy it. But you have to go, you still have to, basically the delivery is slightly different, but effectively the exchange is the same. You have to go to the person who's actually selling the product. So, if we are to get information about Krishna, if we want to know Krishna, then we have to approach the Lord through the recommended process. That means, in this case, it's mentioned here, studying the Vedas. And then putting the information that we learn in the Vedas into practice. Our system is very simple, actually. And we do that by tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upateksyanti te gyanam gyaninas tatpadasana. Our system is not very complicated, actually. We approach the learning of the Vedas through the agency of Krishna's representative, the spiritual master, the spiritual teacher. I mean, the same principle applies in a school, or as Prabhupada says, in a university. If you want to get a degree, if you want to get some learning, then you have to go to the department of learning that you want to become expert in. You then submit yourself to the professor, or the professor may be the head of the department, just like the Prabhupada is the professor, but then he also has his representatives, the lecturers, authorised persons who are adept or expert in their particular field, and then they teach. Then if the students have any questions, they can inquire. They're tested, right? So our process is also, we approach the spiritual master. The spiritual master says, serve under this particular person, or serve in the association of these people. You can inquire from this one, inquire from that one. And then we have our tests. Huh? And actually, through the tests, we actually get to know Krishna. Or, shall we say, it's slightly different, but, the tests in devotional service are the means by which Krishna reveals himself. Of course, testing in the traditional sense of an academic institution is to make sure that you actually know what you've been taught. And, even in some cases, there's practical application. If you're doing chemistry, you do your theory, then they put you into the lab and you have to mix things up and demonstrate that you actually know what you've been taught. So, by following the process of devotion, this process of devotional service is actually a mystic system. It has mystic potencies, mystic power. By rendering service to Krishna through the medium or the via medium of his representative, the spiritual master, which could be a number of people. We were discussing on Friday at Siddharaj's place. The spiritual master manifests in different forms. What are those forms? Primarily there are two. There's actually more than two. But primarily there are two forms of the spiritual master. If you can tell me what they are. That's not the answer to the question, though. But it is an answer. It's not a wrong answer. But it's not the answer that I'm looking for.
Diksha
and Shiksha. Yes, we have Diksha and Shiksha gurus. It is forbidden in the Shastra to have more than one Diksha guru, Prabhupada mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But Prabhupada says one can have an unlimited number of Shiksha gurus. Probably best not to have an unlimited number of Shiksha gurus, because then you might get a little confused. But ordinarily, the principle is that we work under the auspices of certain persons who guide us, who help us, who support us in our devotional service. And by rendering our service in that way, because each one of those personalities represents Krishna. And those persons can be people that we're actually living with and working with now. It's not that, the guru has to be some, highly elevated personality who we never get to associate with. I had that realization when, after many years of, a number of years, not many years, when we first joined the temple, we were told, here's your guru, right? And you were given a picture of your guru, and that was the person that you had to take initiation from. And in my experience, I got very little instruction from my guru. Little association and practically no instructions. And I realized that actually the people who were my gurus were the people who were guiding me in my day-to-day service. It was Balarama and Korma. Especially Korma, he get you out of bed in the morning. Come on, get up. Wake up. Get out of bed. Do your service. Count your rounds. I remember once we came back from India in 1981, and for the first part of the trip we were in Mayapur, and I was chanting 32 rounds every day and really fired up. And then we had the horror bus ride from Mayapur to Jagannath Puri for 32 hours. I remember Gangaswara, he was sick with
something, some stomach problem. He lay on the floor of the bus. And, you know, there was no carpet on the floor, it was just, you know, metal plates. You know, those metal plates with those bumps in it. And he lay on the floor for 32 hours on that bus. And we only got breakfast on the first day. The devotees were tying themselves in order to, you know, because it was one of those Indian buses where there were three of them actually. All the Aussie devotees were on the bus, and there was two seats on this side and three seats on that side. And, you know, they're not built for Australian-sized bodies. And you couldn't sleep, so we got our chadars, our Harinam chadars, and we tied on the back of the seat, then tied around so that, you know, when you fell asleep, you wouldn't fall out of your seat. It was horrible. In fact, the devotees were plotting to kill the bus driver. Because they would stop at the checkpoints because they didn't want to pay the taxes. And they would wait for the change of the shift of the people who were taking the tolls or whatever, and then they'd drive through. And the devotees were just fried. No water, nothing to eat. It's amazing how you can subsist on papadums and cucumbers. It was horrible. So anyway, we got to Jagannath Puri, and that was somewhat of a relief. Although by that stage, my adherence to chanting 32 rounds a day, I wasn't able to do that anymore. It was just a struggle to chant 16. And then I remember I got to Vrindavan, got the flu, and instead of getting out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning, we were getting out of bed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was horrible. So when we got back to Melbourne, I was a mess. Along with, I think, Gangeshwar ended up in hospital for 2 weeks with pneumonia. Or maybe that was another trip. In fact, in those days I used to think, what's all this fuss about going to India? You come back half dead. What's the big deal? So anyway, it was very difficult to get up in the morning for a few weeks. And fortunately, Kormi was there for me. Come on, get up, get out of bed, chuck around. As usual. Because we can look back on these things now fondly. But I realised afterwards that, sometimes we owe, it was tough times. It was tough times for me to be a devotee then, because there wasn't very much inspiring about life. We were sick and tired and really not very enthusiastic to do anything. And I think, still brought back some stomach bugs from India. So still battling with them. But I realised later on, that actually, Korma, I thought at the time he was just bullying me. You're just a bully. Leave me alone. But actually later on I realised that actually he was showing his affection for me by making sure that I was getting up and following the, sleeping in bed is not the process recommended by Krishna. To realise him. Krishna recommends that we get up early in the morning and we chant our rounds and render our devotional service. And it's through that process. So I realised actually, Korma was actually protecting me. He was looking after me. And in that way he was acting as my guru. So, I take an initiation from one person but who really obviously had some affection for me and was concerned about me, but really I had no connection with that person physically, but yet, we obviously have to be respectful and honour and worship the initiated spiritual master, but we also have to honour and respect and even worship the instructing gurus, even if we think they're bullying us sometimes. Get out of bed, go to, do your service. And they both have a, in Islam especially, they both have a, a, an important role in seeing that we're making advancement in Krishna consciousness. And we see it with Lord Chaitanya. Actually, Lord Chaitanya would give certain of his disciples to other of his advanced disciples to guide them in their devotional service. Prabhupada did that. That's our system. And by being faithful to that system of rendering service either to the initiating guru or to the instructing gurus. Now Prabhupada told his disciples, the GBC men, he said, I am the initiating, you are the instructing guru. Right? So by honouring that system, Krishna reveals himself. It's a mystical, transcendental process. And it's something that we're doing all the time, especially if we're following this, the regulated practice of devotional service as it is recommended by Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami is one of our gurus. In fact, we are Rupanujas, we are followers of Rupa Goswami. And we follow Rupa Goswami by applying the process of devotional service as it is recommended in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or the Nectar of Devotion. In fact, Prabhupada said, this is the law book for ISKCON. This is how we apply ourselves to the process of devotional service. And of course, that means there are certain ingredients that we have to have, there are certain characteristics that we have to have, certain ingredients that are essential for the process to work. The guru has to be qualified to engage the disciples appropriately, so that their psychophysical makeup, the faculties of perception, intelligence, the mind, the senses. That's what comes when you get a material body. You get a mind, intelligence, and senses. So the spiritual master looks at what kind of a mind and what kind of intelligence and what kind of senses we've got, sums up the nature or the character of the devotee, and then he engages them accordingly. The disciple needs to be what? Humble and submissive, and has to be endowed with the characteristic of what? What's the next item that's required? Inquisitive. One has to inquire. As Prabhupada said, the only question that I had of my spiritual master was, how can I serve you? That's Prabhupada's mood. Especially the mood of a devotee. This is the story of Ghanasyam in Radhanath Maharaj's book. Is it what's called A Journey Home? Back home. And it's an amazing book, actually. You think that nothing more, that you've read all of the exciting bits, and you turn out another page, there's something more exciting happens. It's quite an amazing book. It's a gripping thriller, would you believe? Radhanath Maharaj, was introduced to this devotee called Ghanasyam, who worshipped Radha and Krishna in a closet, and in the house of this family. And Radhanath Maharaj was staying with him, and Ghanasyam was serving Radhanath Maharaj. He said, you're Krishna's dear my servant, and it's my duty to serve you. And so, every offering that they made an offering of these, Vrindavan rotis, which is like a very thick, in Vrindavan the rotis are quite thick, chapatis. And Ghanasyam would feed Ranath Maharaj is the remnants of the offering every day. Until one day, one of the local Vrajbasis was scowling at him. And he said, because of you, Ghanashyam is not eating. He's starving. And Ranath Maharaj was surprised. He was shocked. He said, I didn't know. He says, yes, Ghanashyam is giving you his three rotis and he himself is not eating anything. This is the mood. Ghanashyam's mood was, if I want to please Radha Krishna, if I want to get Radharani's mercy, then I have to serve you. That was his mood of service. So then, the next day, Radhanath Maharaj came late. He came late to see Ghanashyam. But when he got there, Ghanashyam was still ready. He was hoping Ghanashyam would eat the rotis, so that then he wouldn't give them to him. But Ghanashyam just kept them and waited for him to come. He said, no, I can't have them. You should have them. He said, no, I can't. How can I please Radha and Krishna if I don't please their servant? I think it just struck me how the mood of this devotee was. So he was serving his deities, Radha and Krishna, but he was in the mood of serving them by serving their servants. And he was seeing Radhanath Maharaj as a great servant of Radha and Krishna, because at that stage he'd actually met Prabhupada before that, but he was living in Vrindavan without, at that stage, hadn't actually surrendered to Prabhupada. So this mood of service, you know, this mood of serving the devotees, especially, is paramount, imperative to making this process work. Right? This humility, submissiveness. And then inquiry, and inquiry being, you know, how can I render some service to you? That's the system. And then one has to then do the service. You know, this we see it sometimes when people are inquisitive, and they ask lots and lots of questions. They get lots of answers, but then they don't do anything, right? They don't follow the process. Or they challenge, they want to argue a little. And you know, for us actually, argument, logic, all these things are not actually necessary in devotional service. Inquisitiveness is okay. To inquire, to discover, to explore, to understand the intricacies and the application of devotional service is fine. But just, you know, argumentation and debate, logic and so forth. Not that Krishna consciousness is illogical, but it's not necessary. In fact, it can be an obstacle. It's a symptom of being unsubmissive. So when a devotee has that service attitude and is prepared to serve Krishna by serving his representatives, then Krishna starts to reciprocate with the devotee. When the mood is humble, submission, and inquiry, how can I serve you? And then one actually does it, save way out. Then Krishna says, enough. Then I'll reveal myself to the devotees. Well, actually he says, you know, the devotees will reveal the truth to you. So, when one becomes fully absorbed and saturated here, when one becomes saturated by the performance of devotional service, then
One is elevated to the transcendental platform. One's activities then are no longer material activities, but actually they're on a spiritual platform. And what happens is, rather than, of course, we're engaging the material senses, mind, intelligence in devotional service, what happens is these things become purified. And then when the mind, senses, and intelligence are all purified by this absorption in devotional activity to Krishna, one becomes purified, sublimated. And then as a result of that purification, and Krishna is very easily perceived by the devotee. This is the benefit of the human kind of life. And is why one is recommended to take advantage of it. Because we can use our mind, intelligence and senses to perceive the Lord within the whole creation. Vidyananda Maharaj explains here. How do we do that? We understand, I am a creator. My mother and father created me. Well, one form of logic. And so therefore, they had a creator, and before them they were also created. So there must be one prime creator, you know, that starts everything. And we can seek that out by intelligently analysing everything. One can come to that realisation. And as Vidyananda Maharaj mentions in the purport here, in the purport to Canto 2, Chapter 2, Text 35, Prabhupada gives an explanation of how one can utilise the intelligence to perceive the presence of the spiritual within everything. Well, that's quite an intricate process. But generally for us, the simpler process is by surrendering to the age-old system of parampara, rendering service to Krishna by rendering service to his representatives, the devotees, and especially those devotees who are given charge of us, who are our siksha and who are our diksha gurus. This is our system, if you like. And if we stick to that process, Krishna will reveal himself to us. Quite simple. It's easy. Except for the tests. It's easy. It's simple in practice. That doesn't mean that there aren't challenges in its application. Right, I'm not finished. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Mataji.
You want to tell us something about Ramanujacharya's appearance?
Today is Ramanujacharya's appearance day. I didn't study Ramanujacharya's appearance.
But there's a few things to
remember. I am not an expert on Ramanujacharya, I'm sorry. Didn't have time to study up. Anything else?
Just with the books being sort of distributed electronically.
Yes.
I heard once that if you write something on hemp paper in iron ink for the last 500 years, you can store it.
Maybe even possibly longer. Yeah. Yes.
And I'm wondering, like, if we go too sort of technologically with this industrious sort of move, technologically
driven
capitalist sort of age.
Yeah.
Will the information be there in 100 years if we sort of go all the way?
If the electricity fails?
Well,
no.
Can we get a chip and put it in a computer now or from 10 years ago?
No, it's a good point. I thought of exactly the same thing. You know, there'll be a point where the operating system will crash or the power will run out.
But they've got discs from 10 years ago, and you don't use them now, they're trash, do you?
Yeah. No, it's... Look, I don't think... You know, in mentioning that, I wasn't at all advocating that we don't keep books.
Yeah.
And in fact, obviously we will. And we should. But it's just an observation that times are changing, and the delivery of information, the gathering of information, the means of communication in this day and age are changing, and we need to change our techniques as well to keep pace with those changes. You know, Prabhupada was against the telex machine in the days when the telex machine came out. But you know, in those days, computers practically didn't exist. Certainly not in the context that we know them now. And the communities that exist online now didn't exist then at all, practically speaking. So, that's a good point. We shouldn't abandon books and the storage of information using books, because they're much more durable. But in this day and age, you know, how many people here have opened up a white pages in the last year? 3 people. There was a time when I used to have a white pages and a yellow pages in my office all the time. And I have the latest version. These days I just, what's this stupid book, throw it out. It's much quicker to find what you want online. Whereas, you know, 10 years ago, if I'd said who's looked up a telephone number in the white pages, everybody would be putting their hands up.
So even like Prabhupada did say utility is the principle.
Yes.
We should use these things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
But then he also said, like, simple life.
Yes.
Simple,
well, it's anything but simple. That kind of an existence. That's the dilemma in one sense for the devotees, because on the one hand we're encouraging simple living and high thinking, but then on the other hand we have to communicate with an audience that is more sophisticated, to put in brackets, sophisticated, in quotation marks, sophisticated. And, you know, if you think about it, the original technology was, as you say, hemp, paper with a written ink, and the Brahmins would, you know, write the books. That was the traditional method of storing the information. Actually, the traditional method was Shravanam Kirtanam, and the people were Shrutidhara, which means they heard something, they remembered it, and they didn't have to be told again. But with the onset of Kali Yuga, then, you know, the necessity was to write things down. So then Vyasadeva compiled the Vedas. Now, the printing press was considered to be a new, you know, revolutionary, right? But Bhaktivinoda Thakur recognised the potency of such a technological advancement, right? So I think in that mood of, as you say, utility as a principle, we can also take advantage of a medium that allows a transcendental message to be delivered to more people. Right? So yes, we want a more simple natural way of life, but at the same time, we also want to deliver the message of Krishna consciousness to people. And if that facilitates that delivery, then we'll take advantage of it. That was the mood. We're not advocating that, you know, we necessarily should give up books, or even, you know, the traditional method of writing things. Maybe we have to get back to that one day.
The computers make things like impersonal or more personal, because the kids are all talking to each other,
aren't they? Yeah. Yep. Even the adults are talking to each other. Yes, it can be personal, it can be impersonal, but it can also be more personal. I think my experience is, you know, I'm communicating with my family members now that I wouldn't normally communicate with. And, you know, because my online name is Aniruddha, so now they're calling me Aniruddha instead of my my Christian name. And they have a greater understanding of what I'm doing, so they're becoming more Krishna conscious, actually. My brothers, you know, because I communicate with my nephews, they know what I'm doing all the time, then my brother knows what I'm doing all the time. So I'm actually keeping in touch with my family a lot more than I used to, as a result. Then the affection increases. Interestingly enough, the affection increases because they're hearing more about you. Oh yeah, you're doing this and you're doing that. Oh, how's it going? How's the preaching? How's the prasadam distribution going? This is my father who asked me these questions. How's the prasadam distribution going? So he's concerned about the success of the devotees, so they become more Krishna conscious, that's interesting. So, you know, technological advancement, which is actually killing the planet almost when you think about it. You know, all of this consumerism is actually just creating more and more pollution. Hellish jobs for people to work in. It's actually killing the planet. But we'll utilize it. Anything else? Panjurashima Bhagavatam Kita Sarva 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 Bhagavatam Kita Sarva